Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. We're back live. Today's Thursday, January 11th. And I know you've been listening to a lot of replays and stuff, but we're back. We'll go over the past couple weeks in a moment. We have an awesome guest, and my co-host today is once again Kay Brandt.
Good morning.
The beautiful, bright, and shiny Kay Brandt.
How's it going, contrast Kay? To your serious scruff going on over
exactly.
there.
Exactly. I've got a scruff here, and not really by choice, Kay.
I know. I saw that on Facebook.
Right. So let me explain to the listeners who don't know. I'm at an advanced stage of a beard right now that's out of control. I never grew a beard in my life. I never went a day without shaving in my life.
Wow. You never had the urge to have facial hair?
No. You know what? Let me take it back. When I was about 20 years old, I think I grew one for a while, for a couple months maybe. But that was it. But it doesn't really count, you know?
Well, why don't you like it?
Well, I like clean faces. I like clean shaven.
Right.
And not only that, but I mean, look, beards are nice, but they have to be trimmed. The situation is this.
Yeah, they're up. They're it's work.
Yeah. It is work. But I don't mind that. But let me tell you why.
Okay.
I can't trim mine right now. So it has to grow wild. I lost my father last week.
I know. I'm sorry.
And thank you for the condolences and everything to you.
Yeah.
And everybody. I mean, the outpouring was amazing.
Yeah.
And I was really touched by all the friends and family and all that. And so in Jewish tradition, when you lose a father and you're a son, you're not supposed to shave or cut your hair for a month. There's also a lot of things you're not supposed to do, but we're not that religious, you know. The most important thing is to say certain prayers for a week and also to sit with the family and stuff. In the old days, you know, it's called sitting Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, people would actually sit on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Today, you don't do that anymore. You know,
right.
Today it was us more like the family, my brothers and my mom and me. And we had a lot of time to bond and talk and stuff. So it was amazing.
That's a good
thing. I really thought it was a good thing. My brother came back from China to be here. Yeah. And imagine he went back. He had gone back 2 days before. He was visiting here.
Oh.
He came to see my dad. He saw my dad was in poor shape. We told him stay a few more days because he was scheduled to leave Sunday, right? Uh-huh. And
what's your brother doing in China?
He's got a business there.
Oh, really?
He works. He's got his wife and kid there. But he started a business now. And China is full of opportunities today for business.
And really lousy air conditions. I mean, you know, smog.
Yeah, I know.
really
I know.
Hard to breathe in China.
No, he
that's
told
all right.
me I wouldn't like it there, so I'm not even going, you know. I'll go to Japan, but not to China.
Right, exactly. Me too. That's how I feel.
But at any rate, he did the stupid thing, and that is he went back when he was scheduled to go back, rather than we told him to wait a few more days. Dad is really sick. He's like, well, he could be like this for weeks or months. Okay, so he goes back. The next day, my dad passes, and we have to call him. He comes right back. He didn't even get over his jet lag yet.
No, well, he
didn't imagine getting the China to L.A. flight, like, last minute.
It's like 28 hours.
Probably cost him a fortune, too. But he did make the trip, and we spent a lot of time, and I feel everybody got a lot closer. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes, you know, someone's passing does leave not only a good legacy, but brings people together. I felt my kids got closer to me since then.
Yeah.
Because they saw me emotional at the funeral and stuff. And I guess they had never seen me like that. So they realized I'm not a monster. You know, I'm an actual dad that loves them. You know?
In many ways, a death like that is a crisis in the family.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And it brings
yeah.
people together like any other crisis would.
Exactly.
Or
but
it pulls them apart.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't have a stable, loving family, it's going to create the opposite effect, you know, because you're putting all these people that don't get along in one place.
My family likes to get into like giant brawls when somebody really? Dies. Well, Italians, yeah. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, like, it just becomes like this war, like, he never loved me and he never loved any of you or any, you know, I'm just kidding. But like that, you know, it would become a huge emotional blowout.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. The sisters, you know, go at war with each other. The brothers go at war with each other. The cousins get involved. The aunts and the uncles. And it just becomes, you know, who was in charge of bringing the cannolis and the cannolis never showed up? What happened? You know?
Yeah, and here everybody pulls in different directions. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Family can be crazy for sure. But I'm grateful that my family is good and together and loving. And now it's just a question of when it's going to hit my mom, actually, that my dad's gone. You know, I mean, they were together for almost 60 years.
Yeah, they're a beautiful
couple,
too.
That's a long time. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Your dad was a handsome, handsome man.
Very. To the last day.
Yeah, oh, really? He looked like he had a lot
Everybody
of charisma, too.
Yeah, he did. You know, he had a lot of... He was a smiling person, even though his upbringing was pretty lousy, you know. I mean, he grew up in Israel.
Like that.
In Israel, before it was Israel, in the 30s and 40s and 50s.
Right.
And they were very poor.
Yeah.
Very poor. You know, so some of the stories, you know, and not stuff I want to repeat, you know.
Of course.
But let's say that, let's just say that his brothers and sisters sort of like remained victims,
mm-hmm.
whereas he moved forward. And he was not a victim, ever presented himself as a victim. He rose above everybody else, didn't have any addictions, and managed to build a loving family and leave a legacy. And that's really all you live about. Nobody cares about your money or anything else, you know. But it was funny because, you know, as my brothers and I sitting there and my mom, we're like piecing together our lives together.
Yeah.
And it's like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. Everybody puts a little piece that we didn't know, you know.
Collective memories.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of weird, but yeah. So, you know what? Let's continue. But I do want to bring in our guest because it's kind of rude to keep her out of this. And I'm so excited to be joined by Sophie Venable, who was a host here years ago, decades
2011.
Ago. 2011?
Yeah, 2011.
Wow, that's a long time.
Congratulations on 10 years.
Well, thank you, Sophie. Yeah. Thank you. And Sophie came out of the woodwork to ask me if she could come here. And I said, of course, you know, everybody's welcome here. And we love everybody, Sophie, and especially you. You're an awesome woman. And I remember only good things about you. So thank you for visiting us and welcome to the
I try
show.
I tried to keep the rumor mill positive.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So welcome to the show, Sophie.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
So you and Angelina, were you born here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you lived here your whole life.
I am. Yeah, I'm a native.
Awesome.
I'm actually a valley girl. Like, I'm really.
Oh, really? Right here.
I was born probably blocks from here.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Yeah.
So, Sophie, before we get to everything about you and the show will be devoted to you, let's just finish a few other conversations here.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
I just wanted to really thank everybody for all their condolences and everything. I mean, you never realize how people really watch you on social media too and stuff until you post something like that and everybody comes out. You go, oh, they're my friend. I didn't even remember them, you know, seeing my stuff.
But do you remember when was it last week or the week before when we were talking about Facebook and I was talking about how much I hate Facebook and
right.
and then we covered this that people love when something quote unquote bad or sad happens
to someone else, right?
Yeah, when tragedy or some sort of crisis is posted on social media, people just flock to it. You know,
well,
just flock to it.
Gives us that opportunity to express our love, you know, because we don't, it's like we're not really comfortable in our culture just kind of always expressing our love for no reason. And then something sad happens in your life and you're like, oh, I have this moment to like let you know that I really care
but
about you.
But it's totally retarded.
You know? It is totally retarded. Don't get me started. That's why I do what I do.
Because like, I post a picture of myself smiling. I say, hey, I'm happy. And I get like 3 likes.
Right?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But I say, I'm really mad about something. And some of them are like, yeah, me too.
Yep.
I'm really mad.
Yeah. Maybe it's because you're touching something in people that moves them to action. And when you say, I feel good, it's like, nah, nah, nah. But, you know, but when you feel bad, it's like they jump in to try
and
to help.
And if you ask for prayers, you're going to get more likes and comments than you'd ever dream. Because people love to pray on Facebook.
They love to send their prayers. Sending my prayers. You know, it's like, come on, you're not praying.
I'm praying for you. Yeah. I'm praying for you and 500 other people that I really don't know on Facebook. Right. I'm praying for you all. I've got my list on the wall of all the people I have to pray for today. You know,
They love to connect over pain. They love to connect over gossip. I mean, that's the whole thing about water cooler talk, right? You know, like nobody ever comes to the water cooler and says like, oh, I had such a great date. Oh, I'm so happy for you. Oh, that's great. It's like, no, it's way more interesting to say like, I went on the shittiest date last night.
Right.
You know, not a good thing to say about anybody because that's boring.
Well,
right?
Just like in newspapers, if it bleeds, it leads, right?
I don't even call it the news. I just call it the bad news. It's just the bad news.
Exactly. That's why news are always bad. Yeah. You know?
I hate Facebook in general. If they had a middle finger that it was an option to give instead of like the angry face and the sad face and the heart and the thumbs up, that would be mine most of
the
time.
They won't even put a thumbs down. You know, people have been lobbying for
a
thumbs down.
They did, back in the day.
They did, but they took it away.
I first got on Facebook in 2007 and there was a downward thumb.
YouTube has one.
They took it out because I don't know, it started fights. People were like, well, why the hell, well, what's going on? I thought you were my friend. And you're really not. It's not about being honest on Facebook. Well, it's about being honest for people who have to continuously say what's happening in their lives. Today I sat in a chair for 5 minutes.
I read one book that said something very interesting. It said, to Google, you tell everything. You ask Google everything. And Facebook, you only show people lies. You only show people what they want to see, what you want them to see.
Although it seems
With Google, you'll ask it anything, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Facebook is like that, you know. And talking about Facebook, and I wanted to bring up the fact that Jeff Bezos from Amazon is now the richest person in history.
I don't like talking about him.
I know, but let me tell you something. The reason I'm bringing it up is because I just started a book that I think is amazing and everybody should read. It's called The Four, and it talks about Facebook, Google, Apple, and Amazon. Mm-hmm. And to see how much power is concentrated in these four companies today. And let me just say this, okay? We'll talk about, Facebook is kind of boring to talk about. We talked about it so much. But,
totally.
But Amazon, okay, if you want to understand how big it is, okay?
I do understand.
It's worth, okay, like the next biggest store, the largest retailer other than Amazon is Walmart, okay?
Yeah.
They're worth about $230 billion. Amazon is worth $450 billion. In other words, Amazon is bigger than Walmart, Kmart, Target, I don't know about Costco, but IKEA and all these combined.
Of course.
Combined.
Yeah.
So if you don't think Amazon is taking over our lives, read the book. You know, and it is kind of scary.
You vote with your dollars. You vote with your dollars every day. You think you only vote a few times. You vote with your dollars every day.
But it scratches an itch for us. It scratches an itch for people that like to collect shit. And also people that you just want it easily. You want it now and you want it for free and all this stuff for cheap. And Amazon gives it to us.
Yeah, that's why I hate them.
Yeah.
Because
so
of what
they've
done to
Amazon,
authors.
You hate Facebook. No. Do you also hate Apple and Google? Then you'll have to raise
the
book.
No, but you know what I'm saying? Look, my issue with Facebook is the fact that it's so fake. And it's so, it has opened up a door I wish would have stayed closed, which is now I have thousands of people on my friends list that I don't know and I don't care about.
Right.
And it makes me sound like a bitch for saying that, because what I should be saying is I care about all these people. I'm praying for all of them. You know, like I can't. Like I literally am so bothered and disgusted by all the posts I see from people I don't know who want to be friends with me on Facebook. And I'm just like, why can't I just like delete it? You know, I've gone through my friends list so many times.
You can, or you can stop caring.
Oh yeah, no, I have.
I mean,
you can just care.
You can just allow it to be.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's positive things that come from it, and there's negative things that come from it, just like anything.
Right.
Positive things that come from Amazon. Just like there's like
exactly
there's both sides to everything. I mean, that's sort of like sorry, I don't mean to be Pollyanna, but that's kind of like what my mission is, essentially, is to like, you know, help people like move into allowance and love around stuff like that, because the more you resist it, the bigger it's going to get.
I haven't resisted it. I have two accounts. You know, I have a Twitter. I have Instagram. I have a YouTube channel.
And it's free and voluntary.
It's free and voluntary. Exactly. But these are all the necessary evils that come along with being a social figure.
Absolutely.
And my issue with Amazon is because of how they've treated. Amazon was built on the backs of authors.
Right.
And there's no argument about that. Amazon was created because Jeff Bezos took a class on how to publish. Mm. And he started Amazon as a book publisher. And we are the first people, authors are the first people that he fucked over.
Right.
And basically rendered us broke.
Right.
And rendered our literature worthless.
Yeah.
99 cents.
Yeah.
35 cents in my pocket every time somebody hits one click.
Right.
Yeah, but if you've ever tried to use a regular publisher, you're only going to get a quarter from every book that you sell.
I do use a regular publisher. And no, so. And this is like, and believe me, this is years of this going down where we saw the peak and then we saw the drop.
I mean, there's like 300,000 books a year published or something now.
Right.
Some
and scams out there that try to deal. But bottom line, it's based on algorithms. And the algorithms are wacky, weird, strange, and there's no way to figure out how those actually work.
Yeah, they change all the time.
Amazon has the right to take a book just because they don't like the cover, and they will put it in a dungeon called the Adult Dungeon where it's marked as adult material, and you cannot find it in a search. So if they're not looking for me or any other author, you will not find it. It will not come up. It will not pop up unless you typed in, let's say, I mean, none of my books are in the dungeon,
title.
But I know authors who have books in the dungeon. Mm. And once you get them out, you have to jump through all of these hoops in order to make it better. You have to change your cover. You have to change your synopses. Mm. You have to be careful of how you advertise it and what you're, because you get that sneak peek that comes up when you look at a book. And if there's anything in that peek that has, you know what I mean? You have to be really careful about introducing sex or sexual topics within those first, like, the page and a half or two pages that you get on the sneak peek.
Right.
So,
well, that's interesting because my title is MILF 101.
Really?
How I wonder if it gets, it probably gets it.
No, you would know. You would know.
Yeah.
No, not.
I know it hasn't been like banned or anything, but I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, you were playing with fire there with the title, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I mean,
whatevs.
But no, but I remember when you came out with it, and it I mean, MILF is just a. It's just abbreviation for things, you know, but that's the thing. And we'll talk about that. And so enough of Amazon and screw Facebook for right now. But Jeff Bezos is worth about $140 billion. No, 105.
Much to your chagrin.
$105 billion, man. You know, that's more than some countries' GDP. But at any rate, we're joined by Sophie Venable. And Sophie is a beautiful woman who's got into a lot of different things in publishing and doing things and putting together workshops and stuff. So you were doing different things back then. What is it you've been doing lately, Sophie?
Well,
where
do I start? Okay, I was born in a small town. No, let's see. Since I saw you, and yes, I did. The book is MILF 101. MILF stands for Make Your Life Fabulous. If you're wondering what the hell that's all about, so I'm a life coach and I'm a dating and relationship expert, communication expert, and I've created since I saw you, and I did MILF Talk for a while. That was the name of my podcast. So since then, I sort of took all my energy and put everything I know, distilled it into an 8-week intensive for single women to help attract healthy, loving, sexy relationships. And the workshop that I'm doing, which is open to men, women, singles, couples, polys, all who love are welcome.
Oh,
over 18.
Right.
And that's going to be a day about really the three main qualities. It's actually a piece. It's like 1/6 probably of my work. It's the three main qualities that you need to look for in a relationship if you're seeking relationship, or that you need to nurture in relationship if you want your relationship to last and be joyful and sexy and expansive and not feel like a trapping.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, you said
it's going to be a fun day. Oh, and I'm going to sing.
Really?
Yeah, why the hell not?
What are you going to sing?
I'm going to sing jazz standards.
What's jazz standards?
Like The Very Thought of You and, you know, Cry Me a River and stuff like that. So
classics.
Classics, like, that kind of keep us sort of connected, you know, because music is such a thing that we share, and it gives us room for our emotions and, you know.
It's a universal connection.
It's a universal connection, and it also kind of reminds us of the timelessness of these
songs.
You know, yeah. Matters of the heart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, because the dating scene is a real struggle for people these days. Yeah. It's really...
I think it's always been a struggle.
How do you know that? You're not single, right? You don't have to deal with it right now. But what, do you talk to people?
Yeah, I mean, I have clients and I talk to people and I interview couples and I read.
Yeah. So what's hard about dating, though? I mean,
well, what's interesting now more than ever, and I don't like to buy into the story that it's like different now than it was before because we, you know, as far as that just being okay, therefore I'm going to give up, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, people who say like, oh, fuck it, I've given up on dating. I'm not going to date anymore. I'm just going to leave it up to God. I'm like, okay, in that organic vegetable garden that you want to magically appear in your backyard without planting any seeds, you're going to get that too.
Not going to happen.
So, like, I'm not saying, like, believe whatever you want to believe, but, you know, you have to have some inspired action. So the difference now, I would say, mainly is that we have so much choice, right? The dating apps and the swiping and everything.
Right.
Sort of, it's like there's this thing called the jam experiment where they basically showed that when people have too many choices, like of jam, it was just, they just used jam. Like, which jam flavor do you want to buy?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have too many choices, uh-huh. you just don't choose.
You don't choose at all.
You just don't choose,
I
right?
do, because I always know what I want.
See, and
yeah,
this
but
is, you know, are you in a relationship?
I'm married.
Yeah, see, there you go. So you
I met him on Match.com.
I met the love of my life on Match.com. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with online dating. I think online dating, which really should be called online meeting, which would sort of help people, I think, in like not just trying to create imaginary relationships online.
Right.
That's what Facebook is for. Exactly. Yeah. You don't want to do that on Facebook. Don't screw up Match.
And dating sometimes, I think, sort of like indicates you're going to be doing this continuously or regularly rather than just meet someone as soon as possible.
Exactly. Like dating becomes the activity or whatever. And it's like, and I know people who are married off Tinder. And plenty of fish,
really?
You know? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it's about, the thing is, you can meet somebody at the grocery store buying mm-hmm. vegetables,
right.
or you can meet them online.
Right.
Where are you? And you know, whether, I mean, if you don't believe that you have any effect on your world, if you don't think that what you kind of put out there is what you bring in, or then I'm probably not your teacher at all. but you know, what have you gotten intentional about? You know, people, I've talked to hundreds of women and a solid 100 of them at least, like directly, what is it that you want in a relationship? And I'll just share one call that I had that she was like, well, I want somebody, you know, who's serious about relationship and has a job and he's like responsible and serious. And I listened to this for like 5 minutes. She finally got around to hiking. And I said, look, I'm going to stop you. Okay. Because I know that you're not going to do my program because we kind of like talked about this before.
Okay.
I said, but I'm going to give you some free tough love
right now.
And she's like, okay. And I'm like, you ready? Because it's not going to be nice.
What'd you say?
I'm like, I almost just fucking fell asleep right now. I'm like, what guy is going to raise his hand and go, I totally want to be serious, responsible guy who's serious about a relationship.
So they're
like,
out there.
What the?
Those guys are out there.
No, like, yeah.
I swear those were the responses that I got. That was it.
Yeah.
I got those. I got the hand raised.
Until you want a commitment after two dates and then they're fucking freaking out. So it's like,
I didn't want a commitment after two dates.
Yeah, you were able to let him come toward you. But this is the problem. Everybody's out there kind of just going like, I need you to fill in this space for me, and we need to figure it out in like 3 dates.
Right.
And there's no room.
Well, those
like
are very organized women, though. Women who are just like, you got to fit into my organizer right now. Like, I have to be able to.
It does happen.
And I'm ovulating next week. So if we're still in this relationship next week, it's going to be time to get me pregnant.
That's right. Well, that's another pressure, right?
Well,
it's true, though. I mean, you got women with their clock ticking.
But I think like something like Match. you know, for me, why I signed up is because I wanted to just like filter out a lot of stuff. And that's impossible over Match too, because there are a lot of idiots, wacko, goofy people on there too. And I got my share of those. But, you know, I mean, it was like my husband and I laugh now because only two. Yeah, exactly. The only two people, and talk about lying on a profile, you know? And the only two things that my husband and I had in common were we were both spiritual but not religious, yeah, and both non-smokers. Oh, wow. And that was criteria for putting us together. Yeah, but I mean, there were other things that, you know, we connected on, and we had been dating probably for about a week and a half, about 2 weeks when he asked me to be his girlfriend over the phone.
Wow.
You know, the phone. Yeah. But you know.
But
you gotta,
you gotta give guys
a little room, man. You know, they're not, they, I mean, we gotta just give guys a little bit of room. They're not as like, they're not as emotionally equipped at all.
Oh, I totally understand. I'm just giving him shit because I know he's going to be listening to this later. So I'm just like, hey, honey. No, it's funny. I mean, because our Match story is funny. We still laugh about it. Like when we see the commercials, we're like, no, it's all a lie. You know, the commercials for Match.
I would never do a commercial. We're in our 10th year together, and I would never do a Match commercial because I just feel like that like jinx it or something. Because our Match story was not what people, you know, would necessarily want it to
be.
And
they tried to do this thing for a while where they did like group meetings, socials, and that burned out pretty fast. Mm. I'm sure they had very few people showing up for those.
Yeah.
A lot, mostly men, probably.
But you know what? I gotta give it to them though. They've lasted for what, 25 years since the internet started. They were the first ones, and they still managed to be, I think, the most.
Are we really a 25
seriously
book?
Taken?
I got on the internet in 1999.
Really? No. Well, it started in 1994, so
that's
when the internet started. Match.
But that was
about
just considered
95.
Trolling for sex on the internet,
and it was free at the time. They just you could see they were building their following and stuff. And today, I think they're one of the few that are taken seriously, and actually people get relationships out of that.
Sure.
You know, and because it's not only about the swiping right and left, it's actually about you take some time to see. But it's still very hard. I think all this online, because like the desirable women, they get all the emails, and what happens is many women, I think, are left without as much attention. That's the first thing. The second thing is all the guys write to those women, and they don't even have time to go through all the responses.
They don't even want to. I got some responses. Right. I got a response.
So then the guys get
irritated.
You know, the guys get disillusioned and everything. They say nobody replies to me. No, you know, and so it's got its flaws. The system as well.
Yeah. It just like, you know, people do. I mean, like none of this is, you know, like none of it is any different than what we actually are in the world at this point.
Right.
Like I mean. It's really difficult. We're in such a weird state between men and women about, like, you know, what we're allowed to say, and like, are you even allowed to tell a woman she's attractive?
No,
right.
I know.
And, I mean,
right.
It's really,
yeah,
really
changed.
It's really tough right now. And right. I'm not saying that harassment does. I'm not saying any of that's not true. I'm just saying what has happened now is that we're all operating in fear instead of in love.
And it's divided, like, men and women, you know, because the thing is
everything's
that,
polarized.
Yeah.
Politics. Men and women, you know,
culture, everything. I know.
Everything's polarized, and that's the energy that, like, you know, we have to kind of find a way, right? We have to find a way to be able to say, like, what it is that we want,
right,
to be able to continue to expand as people.
Right. There's too much political correctness going on, too, you know, where, like you said, we don't know what we can say, what we can't anymore, and how to
that's
say
okay,
it.
That's okay, though, and I really do think that's okay, because we were so far to one extreme.
Sure.
You know, we've had this conversation for months where, you know, I've been talking about the fact that I've always been sexually harassed.
Sure.
Always. I mean, since I was, you know, 18 years old and I got my first job in the industry, I have been sexually harassed. And I could name some names, but I don't want to drag this all up. You know, like my whole thing on social media is not to be that person. You know, like, it doesn't bother me anymore. I'm way over it, and I was way over those things then, and I just never really thought anything about it, because, you know, there was nothing that said that it was not okay for men to do that, you know. And I have been an in workplace
true, because most men do not do that, you know.
Back in the 80s, there was nothing. I mean, there was sexual, I worked for companies, I won't name the company, but I worked for a couple of very big production companies. And we had to sign these documents that said about safe workplace and sexual harassment. But that's just a paragraph on a piece of paper. Yeah. It has nothing to do with what really happens when you're contained in an environment with men and women and you're all going about your tasks. You become very familiar with each other like a family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Like,
it's
just
exploitation. It's exploitation of your position.
I worked for a recording studio that was filled with creative people, not necessarily writers and directors or producers or people making film, but the sound engineers, but the recording engineers, but the people who are mixing, but the people who do all the stuff in the studio. And they're up around the clock. When they've got a big recording artist in the studio, they work straight through. They work on that recording artist's dime. So they're just like, DMX was a famous rapper in the 90s and the early 2000s. He was recording his second CD at this recording studio I worked at. $2 million Sony gave him, and it was him and 25 of his closest friends and cousins and sisters and brothers, and they were stoned the entire time. There was so much ganja being brought in, you know, by the PAs, by the production assistants, to keep the green room, to keep them satisfied. Right. And they never recorded a single song, a single track, until DMX said he was good and ready to do it. And sometimes it didn't happen until 10 o'clock at night, but they were there from 9 a.m.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was just about keeping these idiots, these assholes, these ego cases happy and loaded up with drugs. So how do you say that those engineers that I interacted with on a daily basis had any concept? They were totally sleep deprived. They were starving.
You're
for some of
you're making noise
it.
With your chair or something.
It's the cord.
It is?
Yeah,
it's are you cord. Banging it or something?
No, it's just that when I'm moving my chair.
Okay, because I'm hearing it. I'm going,
I will sit like a statue.
I get so distracted, you know.
So what I'm saying is that it's not like what we get in the news and what all of this stuff is just like the icing. It's just the cover. It's just the ice on it. You know, like it's not the, below
like
the surface.
Like the tip of the iceberg kind of thing.
Yeah, there's no way to pigeonhole that because every work environment is different. Every person is different. Right. You know, actresses are vulnerable creatures. They have been for years because it is hard to make it as an actress. Mm-hmm. It is hard to do anything creative. It's hard to make any kind of money. But if you're face to face with some person of influence and power in the industry and he says, hey, give me a BJ. And then you can have this part. There are women who will say no, and there are women who will do it. And that's what we saw. That's what we're seeing coming out. You know, they do it, and they feel filled with shame afterwards because they know, you know, society says that is wrong to do that.
Right,
you know, but they're the ones who made the choice.
Yeah. Let's move the focus back to Sophie, though. Okay, the hell with negative things. You know, I don't want to.
But that we're talking about sexual harassment and the divide.
True.
You know,
true.
So.
No, I know, and the relationships between men and women. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're here to say that Sophie Venable is going to have a one-day workshop with a musical twist to move you from fear to love in relationship, and that's what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
This is going to take place February 3rd. 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. for singles and couples. Where is it going to be, Sophie?
It's going to be at the Alex Theater in Glendale, which is a really cool space.
Yeah,
it's an Art Deco theater.
Wow, how did you manage to get that?
It's very big.
You must have some connections.
You just like sell. You take your savings out and put that down.
It.
So rent it. It's really cool. It's a rentable space and. I'm excited to be there, and, you know, there could be 50 people there or 1,350 mm-hmm. people there. We'll see.
Wow.
We're you know, filling the room. And
how do you conduct very your nice. Day?
How do I conduct my day
for the event?
Well,
from 10 to 6, how does that unfold?
Well, there's going to be, you know, a lunch break, of course, in the middle, and then there's going to be 2 15-minute breaks. So I'm breaking it down like a football game. It's 4 quarters.
Yeah.
Okay? Quarters and halftime. So... essentially the day will be, it's outlined around, what I call a AAA relationship, which are the three A's that you want to nurture in relationship or seek in relationship or get intentional about finding in relationship. And, those are authenticity, allegiance, and awe. And authenticity is really about, you know, being able to be yourself in a relationship and being brave enough to let
Which
your partner
really
be authentic in
mm-hmm.
relationship.
Right.
And that's why I call this loving on the edge. Because the thing, how this came about was I actually started to write my second book called The Illusion of Vows. And, you know, we we make these vows and these promises to feel a certain way about mm-hmm. each other, right? Like I'm, right. I'm in a, we're getting married or we're getting committed or whatever we're doing at this point, right? And so we've defined our relationship and right. we've kind of defined each other,
the structure,
right? And we, and so what happens is that you know the we are souls in an expanding universe and we need to be expanding because when you start when you stop expanding, you start dying, right?
You don't grow anymore.
So we go and we say, until death do us part. But well, I offer to you, until death of expansion do us part. Because if you don't continue to grow in your relationship, that's where the resentment starts. You're not fully operating as yourself.
Right.
You're not, you know, privacy becomes secrecy. You're feeling stunted. And whether that's out in the world or at home or in the bedroom, these are, you know, it's scary as fuck to say to your partner what you really want, but that is loving on the edge. You got to love without guarantees because the guarantee is a fucking illusion.
Right, right.
Right.
Well, there's the contract and then there's the people. So we are more as people than a contract in anything, business, relationships.
But that is how we've evolved, right? Right? Marriage is not for survival and property ownership anymore. We're choosing these relationships to have life partners, to have somebody witness us, to have somebody... to be greater than the sum of your parts, right?
In my line of work, I know a lot of people who are in untraditional marriages, yet they took traditional vows, but they're living their marriages by their own accord, by their own desires and wills.
I would imagine you're talking about like planned non-monogamy and like open relationships. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those are things that, you know, people might gasp and go, oh, well, you really must not love each other if you can do that, right?
Right. It's hard to wrap your brain around.
It's really hard to wrap your brain around that. When I talk to couples who participate in that, it's really about celebrating each other and allowing them to express their sexuality. And that can be, whether it's in the bedroom or, you know, how could you sort of let your husband go from that day job to just like become an artist? It's like, because I'm not going to be the person that says no to him because I want to celebrate him. I want to make room for his growth as he makes room for my growth.
That all sounds nice and dandy, but I mean, I don't think decisions like that are made in a relationship unless there's been a lot of conversations heading up to that decision of, you're not just going to let, like if my husband, I'm just going to go and quit my job and become an artist. Sure. We have a lot of conversations that led up to that.
Of course, I'm not saying that you just, no, I mean, you've made a commitment and a deal and you have a structure and you have like a living situation, you know, this is where you present change as, this is something I'm thinking about. This is what I need. This is where I'm coming from. But again, if he made that decision and it was the only thing that made his soul feel alive, you might say, well, then do it. But I'm not going to be your partner. But I love you.
Right.
And so that is the non-guarantee. And your partner could die tomorrow.
Right.
They could leave you tomorrow.
Yeah.
The idea that you're, because you... you know, got married when you were 22 and shouldn't have been picking out good furniture, let alone a life partner. And you said certain things, right? The fact that that doesn't create, like it gives us this illusion of external guarantee, right? Of some sort of like, I mean, when people say to me, well, I'll never get divorced. I'm like, yeah, I said that, you know, like, it's like a three-way wall switch in a hallway.
It's only as good as the commitment from both people.
Right.
It's only as good as that.
Well, and also, you can be thoroughly committed, but the other person has a light switch. So, like, it works both ways.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like,
exactly.
They can turn off.
You know,
it is a joint venture, right? And you can sort of stay in the marriage where you're the only one doing the work and you're going to be really, really fucking lonely.
A lot of people do.
Really lonely.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess what I'm saying is that if we can move into operating from a place of patience and appreciation and gratitude and that vibration and of stepping out of our fear, like the ultimate fear and resistance is to this paradigm of my relationship falling apart. Mm-hmm. Like if you live in that fear and you operate from that fear, then nobody's expanding.
Right.
Then you're just contracting and giving yourself the illusion of expansion.
Right.
You're talking about like, mental health ultimately.
You can have pretty mentally stable people who still operate under a certain paradigm and don't realize that they're not growing until suddenly they act out.
Right.
That's not mental instability. Yeah. That's right. Just that's, you know, that's just what.
Well, I see mental health as being well-rounded, healthy inside and out in every way possible.
Yeah,
emotionally, Sophie, physically, mentally.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and so I wanted to ask you, Sophie, do you feel that that people are looking for different things in a partner when they're younger than when they're older?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are definitely, you know, more motivating factors when people are younger. They've got, you know, the women are struggling with their clock ticking a little bit if they want kids.
Right.
And so that creates another dynamic where, you know, I always say, like, if you're 25, don't date a man under 35, you know, because any guy under 30 is just like, I don't know. Then they turn 30 and they turn around to the first person they're dating and they go, oh, I'm an adult now. I should marry you. And it's a terrible reason to get married.
Right.
But ultimately, I think that both young and old, people are looking for everything in their partner. They're sort of asking everybody to be their village.
Right. Like the mother and the sister and the lover.
They want you to be their best friend. They want you to challenge them. They want you to be their lover. They want you to be that. And so now, you know, it's hard to explain. Like, I do in so many ways feel that my partner brings so much of that to me. You know, like he really is, he's very grounding. He is my best friend. He's my confidant. He's my cheerleader. He's, you know, he is a lot of those things. And he's my lover, first and foremost.
But you've been reasonable in what you expect him to be, right?
Yes, but because what you start to figure out is, this relationship, particularly if you want your primary love relationship to be your romantic relationship, he really shouldn't be your therapist and your sounding board for everything. And when you're kind of pissed, call your girlfriend first.
Right.
Just like get that shit out and stabilize yourself so that you can go back to, and I'm talking to women, because you go back to your man with something concrete and you say, okay, so this is what happened. I imagined it meant this. Is that true? And you can have a conversation. You take all that beautiful, chaotic, wonderful feminine energy and you just like push, dump it on him. He's just going to be like, how do I fix this? How do I fix this? And then you get more mad because you don't feel heard. And that doesn't make him stupid and that doesn't make you crazy. Okay, it's because men and women process information differently.
Right, they're different.
Men want to fix things. Not every man is an empath.
No, yeah, right. I mean, well, and even if he is, anybody, if I came to you and said, Sam, you're going to be like, what? I don't even know what to take from this.
Yeah, be defensive.
Bitch to you and go, oh my God, what do I do? And then I go to Sam, okay, so Sam, this is what happened. This is what bothers me about it. What can we do? Boom. How much more constructive and how much less damage is done in that situation.
Right, right. So, or just tell him, or just the woman should let him know, just let me be heard. Just let me talk.
Right.
I want you to listen to me and all that, because women are not as concerned
with
the fix thing quickly as the men are, right? I mean, the men are like, that's why they seem like they don't listen, because they want to constantly fix.
They're thinking about the solution, right?
Right.
And so, but I do think that there is a certain amount of responsibility that we have on ourselves to sort of figure out, what is the solution? What the hell do I want from this conversation? So that you can say what the hell you want from this conversation. And that's what we don't do, because it's too scary, because we think we're going to be rejected and then we're going to be left. Okay, I mean, ultimately, this all comes down to rejection.
Right.
And I'm so scared of being rejected, I'm going to prove to you that you're rejecting me.
Right.
I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to give you the solution so that you can hear me. It's just like when you say, I want you to hold my hand more, and he holds your hand more, and you go, that's just because I asked.
Right.
Fuck you. Like, right. How are you supposed to, how is anybody
supposed to? There's no way you can answer it correctly.
No, you have to, if you got to be responsible for what you need, ask for what you need, and then be willing to receive it and say thank you.
Yeah,
that's the, what you're talking about, gratitude.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we can be in that space of patience and gratitude with each other. And it's not to say that you can't ever be emotional, but maybe you can process that with somebody else. Maybe, and not just with, you know, the emotions of your partner being your whole village. You know, your partner doesn't have to do everything with you.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Fire needs
it's
air.
It's too much yeah. responsibility and too many expectations, I think, to put on any person, you know. If you know that you want him to be your life partner, if you know that you want her to be your only person, your only woman and stuff, you know, find out like what the roles are in the relationship, you
and
know,
make
understand
some room it. For others.
Right.
You know, like that's the couples that make room for others in mm-hmm. their sex lives. They end up making room for others in their life in general. You know, like there's because people are so isolated. And I'm not saying that's
so
the answer. That's not for everybody. I'm not saying
it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It takes a little bit of the we need to protect ourselves from all other feminine and masculine energy because we don't want to be tempted and we're so vulnerable and our relationship could break. It's like actually your relationship could expand. And I'm not talking about non-monogamy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about in general. We're so isolated.
Right.
We create these little tiny pods and we are tribal, communal creatures that
some
need,
people are very comfortable you know? In those pods though. It works for
mm-hmm.
them.
Absolutely.
Like I am definitely an isolationist. Well, I am definitely that person.
But we've evolved to that too.
Right.
We've evolved
right.
to that
but
too
I like
because,
it.
Because we don't have but
right.
but think about it. And in the industry you're in you probably see much more like comfort with contact and everything. But think about how almost scandalous it would be if I just sat next to you and put my hand on your hand.
Right.
You know?
Right.
What if I was like, Sam, I just kind of want to like sit with you. Like I'm feeling
well,
what you've been through.
Then?
Right. I'm feeling what you've been through. I'm right. just kind of like so happy to see you. I just want to sit here and have my hand on your hand for 5 minutes.
And Sam would probably be questioning what is
yeah,
she,
what's her motive?
What, yeah, what's her motive? Right.
Because it goes from
I'd
because
go,
there's
wow,
nothing
you know?
because yeah. there's nothing.
Is she
going to
ask for money?
No, yeah. but there's nothing between friendship and sex anymore.
That's
there's
yeah.
nothing.
True.
There's no. The spectrum is like again polarized.
Right,
right. Right. Everything is polarized, and we have to find a way to be. Well, I mean, you're in this all the time. Like, just be. Not so terrified of our humanity, of our humanness, of our sensuality, of our contact, of our need for
yeah.
for contact.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
closeness
and you're right.
And
it is a lot about
intimacy.
Rejection and everything.
It's all about rejection.
Right.
And fear.
Right. Okay. Well, Sophie, we're totally out of time. So let's again let people know how they can find you, so they can contact you and get more information.
Okay. All right. You can go to sophievenable.com. SophieVenable. And there is where you will find right now that's going to take you directly to the ticket page for the workshop on February 3rd at the Alex Theater from 10 to 6. Check-in starts at 9. There will be music. I have a handsome pianist. I'll be singing some jazz standards for you.
Sounds great,
and,
man.
And yeah,
really
that's
cool.
how to find me.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Sophie, for joining us. You're amazing. And you're welcome back anytime,
of
course.
Oh, thank you so much for having
so
me.
So if you guys want to go to that workshop again, February 3rd, so keep
moving
that in
from
mind.
Fear to love.
Yes.
That's what it says, which is
what's
awesome.
That, like a Saturday or Sunday or something? Or what day of the week is it?
That
you
is
know?
A Saturday, and you
okay,
will be done
cool.
in time to go have dinner in beautiful downtown Glendale.
There you go.
So,
thank
and
you,
if
everybody.
Money's an, you know, if money's an issue, drop me an email. I'll give you a coupon code, Sophie@SophieVenable.com.
There
nice.
You go. So you don't have an excuse for not going.
That's right.
And thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.